The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
We got a mission. We're on a mission. We got plans. We got things that we're doing here. I am streaming live on both YouTube and Twitter. So everybody out there on Twitterdom, how y'all doing? What's up? I'm just saying hey to everybody right now. Okay, we got so much. I have such a wonderful schedule for you guys today. I have Joe from Texas is going to be calling in. You can go to joefromtexas.com. But Joe from Texas is going to be in here, followed by the champ. The champ will be here. That is Senator-elect David McCormick. I'm so excited to talk to him. I have Pastor John Amachukwu. You guys, if you went to AmFest, he was there speaking up on stage. Jack Posobiec. I love Jack. He's so adorable. I mean, when I see him, I just think he's so adorable. So Jack Posobiec is going to be stopping by, followed by our congressman, the great he's so wonderful. We truly have a gem in him, and Democrats are, he has a big target on him. That's Congressman Scott Perry is going to be in the house. So we have a really jam-packed schedule. Here's the number, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Go ahead and call in. I'm so excited. So let's just go, though, before everyone comes in. I was like, you know, let's just kind of talk about what's going on in the news a little bit. So we have Democrats up to their old tricks. Democrats being Democrats, i.e. being a threat to democracy. They have now said that, you know, Congress doesn't have to listen to the Electoral College. They don't have to listen to the will of the people. In fact, they can just not accept Donald Trump's electoral votes. Like, just block him altogether. You don't have to listen to the people. You don't have to listen to the Electoral College. Just block Donald Trump. You don't have to accept him. Obviously, they are citing the 14th Amendment. Let me tell you, the 14th Amendment has really been beat up on, abused, kicked in the throat. Every time Democrats want to cite a reason why they don't have to follow the Constitution, somehow they bring up the 14th Amendment. And this time it's Section 3 that says you can bar anyone who engaged in insurrection after taking an oath to support the Constitution from holding office. So they're saying because of Donald Trump's second impeachment, which found him guilty, because the Colorado court kicked him off the ballot. Remember when they kicked him off the ballot before the Supreme Court said, no, you have to keep him on the ballot. They're citing that, and they're citing that phony witch hunt of a January 6th committee that they call bipartisan. We know it wasn't really bipartisan. Well, they're saying those three instances where Trump was adjudicated before the people, that those three are enough of a reason to invoke the 14th Amendment, Section 3, that says Donald Trump engaged in an insurrection. And so what do they do? Well, because he engaged in an insurrection, according to them, we're going to engage in an insurrection, because that's essentially what they're calling for. They're wanting to steal the election. They're wanting to invalidate the will of the people. They are being a threat to democracy, as they usually are. And I mean, it sounds like they're endorsing an insurrection. It sounds like a conspiracy to overthrow 2024 election. Now, if you remember, there were people who were issued warrants that were served on people for saying far less than this about Biden in 2021. Now, you know, and there has been, I believe there's some takers in Congress who saying, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to acknowledge these votes. But these two people, this is in The Hill, which is what some call, you know, legacy media at this point, or at least a valid media source, The Hill. They allowed this story to run. And the two people who wrote the story are former editor-in-chief, one of Columbia Law Review, the other of Yale Law Journal. So these are influential people. These are people we would generally look to for to be reasonable, to help us understand what the Constitution says. So these two people have written this article. You know, and again, it's just Democrats being Democrats. But I, you know, we're going to have Congressman Scott Perry on. We'll ask him, right? Like, what are his thoughts on that? Also, on Sunday, December 29th, the Trump team, Trump's chief of staff, Susie Wiles, issued a directive, an official letter barring, instructing all of the nominees who are going to be before, who are going to go before Senate confirmation, to stop posting on social media. Shut it up and shut it down. So that came from Susie Wiles on Sunday. The memo also reiterated that these nominees and the transition team members do not speak for the United States, nor do they speak for Trump himself. So Trump is like really reining in these wagging tongues, and I can appreciate that. Coming out of 2020, coming out of 2016 through 2020, you saw there was a lot of loose ships, which is loose. Well, how did that analogy go? Loose lips sink ships. Yes, I'm horrible with analogies, but nonetheless, we had a lot of loose lips. A lot of tongues were wagging in Trump's first administration. And so sounds like he's trying to be really serious, because, you know, we have Pete Hegseth is going to run into some headwinds. He was picked to be Defense Secretary Tulsi Gabbard, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFKJ, is running into some headwinds as well. And so the directive is to shut your mouth, be quiet, zip it up. And I can appreciate that. Also, Carrie Lake. I mean, this has just been a really, I mean, everybody has something to say this week as we exit 2024 and go ahead into 2025. Carrie Lake has said she will not run for governor again in Arizona. As you know, that is coming up in 2026. She says, she put out on a social media post, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to put my family through, quote, the torture of another campaign. She said, and says she's going to focus on helping Donald Trump instead of pursuing a gubernatorial bid. As you know, Donald Trump announced that Carrie Lake would serve as the next director of Voice of America. And this is interesting because she said in the social media post that she put out, she said there is a corrupt machine here in Arizona that is hell bent on making sure I will never hold office. And so she finishes that with saying, I will avoid putting my family through the torture of another campaign. Because let me tell you, when you run for office, it's not just you who is running. In fact, it is your whole family who is running. Everyone is running in that campaign. It is torture, you know, to just put yourself out there continuously, repetitively. And a lot of the headwind she faced came from the Republican Party. I can so relate to Carrie Lake. I can relate to her that the majority of the headwind she faced did not come from Democrats. It came from her own party. Who is this? I have someone on the line. Big Al. Hey, what's up?
Hey, how are you today?
I am doing well. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, no problem at all. First of all, I'd like to say they better stop playing politics, because if you look at Trump's previous 4 years and this past 4 years, you got to go with what Trump says. For, you know, don't be Democrat, don't be Republican, don't be independent. Let's do what's best for the American people.
Yes. I mean, go figure,
okay,
right?
Secondly, mm-hmm. Yeah, secondly, I want to say is from what I understand, that the people that are fighting the sanctuary cities, mayors and governors that's going to be fighting Trump, they could be charged with harboring criminals, right? Can't they be prosecuted?
Let me tell you, Tom Homan does not seem like he is playing even a little bit. And that is what we need. A lot of these people have been able to get away with the things that they've been getting away with because, quite frankly, Republicans haven't really projected strength we have the backbone of ear cartilage for the most part. And so here comes Tom Homan walking in saying, I'm not playing. I'm not playing at all. And so I think that's going to go a long way.
Yeah, but they could be charged, I think, because I heard something about harboring criminals, and that's against the law. So that's what the governors are doing. That's what the mayors are doing of these Democratic cities. They're preventing criminals from being caught.
I am all for it. I am all for it. I am all for it. And I think a lot of people are as well.
Yeah, God bless you and have a safe New Year.
Thank you so much, Big Al, for calling in. Before I go to break, I know I'm getting ready to hit a break right now. I want to also mention Elon Musk has changed his Twitter name to Kikius Maximus. So Kikius Maximus is a very popular cryptocurrency meme coin. It's Pepe the Frog meme with Maximus. So it's Maximus in the image of Pepe the Frog. Now, Maximus, you know, when I saw that, you know, everybody's just joking, like, oh, that's just so funny. But when I was home, when I homeschooled my kids, we took Latin for, I don't know, maybe about 5 years of that. And so the word Maximus in English is the greatest. And it's a warrior title that is given as the title of honor. And it became popular as a saint's name. So you started seeing a lot of saints being called Maximus, Saint Maximus, right? So if you look behind the joke and the humor, which most of us are going to just, you know, it's going to go right over our head. But just pause. Elon is now the warrior saint. The greatest, right? The whole natural order culminates in him, beginning and end, culminates in him. He is declaring himself Saint Maximus. Very interesting. Hello, Mr. Joe. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Kathy, and yourself?
I am doing well. Happy New Year's Eve.
Yep. Happy New Year. 25 is going to be a great year.
I'm so excited, bringing the energy in the studio, because we're going into 2025 like you can't stop me. We're going to get our country in line, and I'm so excited.
I am too. It is truly great to be on this side of the election. Got it behind us.
Well, you know what? You were a big part of that election. I don't know if people know who you are, but guys, go to joefromtexas.com. I mean, just a wonderful man, a businessman turned political activist. You and several others sponsored Tucker Carlson live tour that traveled the nation right before the election. And I believe it was pivotal in winning. When you guys came here to Pennsylvania, I walked into that room. I walked in a little, you know, dejected, a little discouraged. It is a battle out here on the ground. And I walked into that space and I was pumped with energy. I felt hope from that point through the election. And you were a big part of that. Thank you.
Well, you're more than welcome. You know, we felt that energy in 16 cities. It just seemed like it grew as we got further into the month of September.
It was very energetic. It was exactly what I think we needed to get out of the slump and to know that, no, there is hope. There is people who are fighting. And you were a big part of that. Now, out of all of those things that I said about you and your title, one of the things that I find very encouraging every time I hear you speak is that you are a wonderful storyteller. And I believe there is power in being able to tell a story. And your number one, Scott, sent me your story that you sent out right before Christmas, I believe it was. It was a very inspiring story about our young people, which, of course, I'm just so attracted to that kind of thinking. You wanted to share that?
Yeah, sure. It was a late afternoon that we finished a charitable event in Houston that me and Linda went to, an awards for the employees there, and that was very heartwarming to see employees cheer each other on at MD Anderson. Those people see all of us at our worst, but they are wonderful people. Some 24,000 people work there, and we go to that award every year, and it really lifts your heart and your spirit to see people that really love to help one another and support one another. So on the way home, it was chilly. It was raining, mist and rain, and we stopped at one of our favorite restaurants to have a late supper. And when we walked in, it was I noticed that the parking lot was about half full. The restaurant was a little more than half full. And I asked the young lady if we could have a booth to sit in. I thought that would be a little warmer in a booth, and they had one left. So we sat down. We ordered our tea, and we ordered an appetizer, and the young lady waiting on us, very friendly. Just we felt good because we're on the traffic side of Houston was behind
right.
us,
mm-hmm.
so we knew we were headed home. And as we started in on our appetizer, I noticed that the booth behind me emptied and a booth behind Linda emptied. People started leaving the restaurant and heading home. It was on a Wednesday night in the middle of the week. And a little bit later, I noticed there was a movement behind me, and that was somebody cleaning that table and cleaning that booth and rubbing it real hard. And Linda started kind of rolling her eyes at me to get my attention, and so she did. And the young man finished the booth behind me and walked with his tray over to the booth behind Linda. He was a well-groomed young man, probably in his early 20s at best, and he proceeded to clean that booth. And he was really working hard, rubbing the table, rubbing the booth hard. And I reached in my pocket and took out a folded $100 bill that I keep for occasions kind of like that to help people when we know somebody's a good, hard-working person or a kind person. And Linda nodded at me that was her approval. So that's why she was trying to get my attention. The young man finished with the booth and picked up his bus tub, and he walked by, and I asked him to stop. And I told him I had this for him, would he accept that blessing? And he was so thrilled and so excited and just could not get over the fact that he was getting a $100 tip for being a busboy. And he thanked me, and he thanked Linda, and I told him how much I appreciated him taking the blessing. He said, "Sir, do you happen to have two $50 bills? And I said, "No." And it kind of caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
I said, "No, son, I don't." And he said, "Well, that's okay. I'll get that from the lady at the register. There's another young man bussing tables on the other side of the restaurant, and I'd like to split this blessing with him." And it just really, you know, Kathy, I just kind of sat there and thought for just a second, and then I said, "Well, no, I can do one better than that. I don't have the change," but I reached in my pocket and got another folded $100 bill, and I handed it to him. I said, "Just please share this with your coworker." And he thanked us again and had such a smile, and he left. Within, I'd say, a minute, I don't think me and Linda was even talking to one another. We're just sitting there kind of absorbing the generosity that this young man had
right.
for a coworker. And another young man shows up. He sticks his hand out to fist bump me, and he said, "Sir, thank you so much. And ma'am, thank you. I hope y'all have a great Christmas." And thank y'all for the blessing. And it was a moving moment.
Yeah.
And I thanked him, and he left. And then we're both sitting there again, kind of just trying to absorb it, you know. And I thought, well, you know what? This just really shows me that I do judge people for what they are, not who they are, just what they are. You can tell in these two young men's heart that they were good, hardworking
yes.
young people. The first young man was a white young man. The second young man was a black young man. And it showed me there that they kind of, that kind of reminded me of Martin Luther King when he said that he'd like to see it someday where people were judged on their character and what's in their heart instead of the color of their skin. And it kind of renewed that spirit to me that night right there. But I've never lost my faith in young people. I think they're a lot
yes.
smarter and a lot loving and so forth than what the politicians and a lot of the news media and everything paint them to be. Let these people learn each other and decide for their own self whether people are good or not, just on their heart and their character. So that was a great Christmas story for me and Linda, and I was truly blessed, and she was truly blessed to experience that. So I wanted to share that with everybody.
And it was a blessing for me. Now, I read the story when Scott sent it to me. I read it again last night, and now I'm listening to you tell it to me again. And it just makes my heart feel good. It just, and that's why I wanted you to share it as we exit 2024 and go into a new year. I think we're going to need all the encouragement we can get. And this certainly is one, especially at a time when our nation is really over the last week been talking about the quality of our young people and the quality of our culture. And yes, we do have a lot of work to do on our education system with our young people, on the caliber of our culture, the morality within our culture. But at the same time, stories like this, it reminds you that there is no other country like America. I love our country. We're not perfect, but there is, you would be hard pressed to find somebody who's leading us. you'll be hard pressed to find someone in the number two spot that is closing in on us. We're not perfect, but this country is just amazing. And when I read this story, it just really encouraged my heart that it's not as negative as some would think. There's a lot of potential within our young people. So thank you so much for sharing that story.
You're more than welcome. It was a blessing for me and Linda to experience that. What a Christmas gift.
I know, right? But, you know, and so I was so glad to read that again last night. But now I'm reading it because when I read it the first time, we were not in the throes of, you know, H-1B visas when I first read it. But last night I read it again. And now I'm thinking in terms of, you know, what we've been talking about this last week. And you wrote an article and it was almost like you picked up a rock and threw it in the pack of it. Threw it in a pack of dogs, said, let me see who's going to holler. And I found that to be very courageous from your perspective, because we're now talking about, you know, most people are like, hey, let's just deport all illegals. But now we're now talking about, well, hey, we need to bring in some legal migration into our country. And then you put out an article on Monday in the midst of all of this saying, wait a minute, the shortages in our labor market is real. And the call to abolish all immigration, however, is not it's untenable. It's not reasonable. And I'm gonna leave it here for you to pick up on. But you cite as your premise a December 2024 study from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that outlined that the United States has a shortage of workers. Most people have concluded that. But you went on to say if every unemployed worker took an open job in their industry, there would still be millions of open jobs. Again, leading to even if every American who didn't have a job filled a job and there were no Americans who were unemployed, there would still be millions of open jobs. Kind of going to your point that we need to be very realistic as we head into this next administration around the topic of immigration, legal and illegal.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, when you look at the plans that the new administration has, and they want to rebuild our economy and get our manufacturing back up to what it was many, many years ago, many decades ago. And we need to do that. We need to be less dependent on these foreign countries, obviously, from oil to just anything that we make. We can do it in this country. We've taught the world how to do most of what's being done today. But, when you drive through town, and you see help wanted signs, truck drivers, operators, food service people. I mean, in all sectors, this country is hunting people to work. And, you know, when I visited with some of the people that are going to be on the new administration's team, you know, about this particular topic, and we talked about it several times as I had the opportunity to visit with them, you know, it's a juggling act. You know, right now, if we was to create 10 or 15 million more jobs through the manufacturing sector, who would fill those jobs when you can't fill the jobs that are out there right now? And what you would create a situation where people would leave their current employer and go to another one, would have a bid war for people to get, and that would run the cost of goods up that way. So that would be a negative thing to happen. You know, back at the turn of the century in the late 1800s, 1894 to 1954, 20 million people came through Ellis Island, immigrants, and it did it the right way. It was a whole lot easier to get in that way then, but, and they went to work in the factories, and they helped build this country, and they opened up butcher shops and shoe shops and all kinds of things. And now about 40% of America have ties to Ellis Island. So if you do it right, there's nothing wrong with bringing in immigration. And I think that's what we should do. Obviously, first thing first, we need to close the border. We need to get rid of the bad people that have come through our border, our open border over the last 4 years, or actually the last decade. Let's back it up 10 years. That's where we've had the biggest problem down on the border. We need to clean that up, and then we need to fill these jobs with good, God-fearing people who want to make America their home and want to come here for the right reason. When people talk with Joe, are you okay with Hispanic labor here working here and sending some of their money home? Kathy, I don't care what you do with your paycheck. That's your paycheck. If you're a good, honest person, you're a God-fearing lady, and you get up every day and you put one foot forward and you want to help this country, you want to take care of your family, and what you do with your paycheck is up to you. If you want to send it to another country, if you want to give it to a charity, if you want to wait and give it to the busboy, do what you want to with your money. But the main thing is you earned it. And we've got too many people in this country not earning the check they're getting. Mm. Okay? And that's what we need to do. We need to fill these jobs with good, hardworking people, humans, that want to make America a better place. And that we're a melting pot anyway. To say, well, all I want is people that were born in America, Native Americans. Well, hey, that ain't going to happen. Let's just go ahead and have a melting pot, and let's make the best of it. But let's stop the cartel from doing what they're doing. Let's close that border. Let's get a handle on it. And let's put people back to work in this country. And we can do that. There's no two ways about it. You know, they've got a big job ahead of them, the administration. They got to cut that waste and the fraud and the abuse. They got to streamline government. And another man was telling me, I was on a show here just this week. He said, well, Joe, when they cut back on those jobs in the government, those people can come out and take these other jobs. I said, those people are not going to roof your house, pour the concrete, put down the blacktop, tie the rebar, hang the skyscrapers. That's not their job set. We have got to get people back into the hard workforce, the manufacturing side, the building this country from the ground up. Every job does not, their description isn't sitting at a computer screen or at a desk. We got to have a lot of people out here carrying the weight.
To do the heavy work. Yeah, and that's the reason why I wanted to bring you on, because, you know, this conversation around immigration, illegal and legal, it's being melted down into a bifurcated choices, good, bad, yes, no. But it's much more complex than that. And I wanted to bring you into this discussion because I thought that this is, you know, I read your article last night. It is on Newsmax. You can go and take a look at it. Joe Penland, updating immigration registry would help address labor shortages. I found that to be very balanced and a very reasoned out position that people should be really kind of wrapping their mind around. I have one more minute. I want you to, you know, I want to go back to your story for a moment about these young men. The thing that kept popping up is how you described them, well-groomed, working hard, being very thorough, selflessness, politeness, and, you know, like those kind of characteristics. And when we think about how do we create an American culture that breeds excellence again, would you say it starts there, teaching our children those soft skills of just being polite?
It does, Kathy. And, you know, the thing about these two young men, they were judging each other themselves. Mm. Nobody was telling the other guys good, bad, or watch out for him or this or that. Let people look and make their choice themselves. And that's what's wrong. There's too much influence in the colleges. There's too much influence in the school and in politics and press. Let us make our own decision. We're not that dumb. We all don't have a Harvard degree, but we're not that dumb. Let us look at it and say and single it out for ourselves.
I agree so much. Joe from Texas, Happy New Year, sir. Take care, you and your family. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you for expanding our mission. Thank you so much. God bless.
Absolutely. Listen, if you want to call your senator, your senator-elect, Dave McCormick, here's the number, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And I am Kathy Barnett sitting in for the great, she's so precious. I adore Dawn Stensland on the Dawn Stensland Show. But you guys remember, Dave was actually, he was smiling from ear to ear. He was actually at Mar-a-Lago when Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, came to Mar-a-Lago. Dave was there. Hey, Dave, you're here?
I am. Happy New Year, Kathy. How are you?
Happy New Year. Did you hear the song that I had for you? Just for you, Dave. Here's your Rocky song. You're the champ.
I love it.
The champ is here. The champ is here.
I love it.
Run around the ring. Yes, Dave. Run around the ring. You deserve it. You won it. I'm so very happy for you and your lovely family. But this is for you. Take your bow.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, every year at the Army-Navy game, I take my six girls when they were growing up, and I'd make them do the Rocky run and then end up running up the steps.
So, yes!
That means a lot to me. That song means a lot to me. How are you?
I am doing well. Okay, Jim, fade it out, baby. I am doing well. So excited. So excited to have you on as well. Well deserved. I don't know if you've been on the station since your win, but this is, I know you and I texted, but this is our first time talking. And congratulations.
Thank you. You know, I feel honestly so privileged to have the opportunity to do this. You and I talked about, you know, how much we needed new leadership in the Senate and in the country. And I just feel grateful. I had such great support from across our Commonwealth, and it was obviously a very close race. But very proud and grateful, and grateful for your help. So thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's my first time back since winning.
Oh, look at that. Well, thank you so much for gracing this particular show and me as well. So when do you actually swear in?
January 3rd is our swearing in. And, you know, after that, it's going to be just a mad rush because we obviously need to get moving on getting President Trump's nominations in office. And we also are going to have a busy agenda really trying to turn the country around after the really weak leadership of President Biden. And so there's a big opportunity. I know President Trump's very focused on delivering on the many promises he made, and I am too. So that's the agenda.
Yes. And so you're going to swear in. So that's this Friday. Congratulations. And then you will be a part of reviewing Donald Trump's nominees.
Right.
And voting
well, I've already started. Yeah, I've already started to do that. And listen, here's the starting point for me. President Trump won a big mandate, and he promised disruption. You know, he ran as a disruptor, and so he's going to pick nominees that are disruptors. And I think he's done that in many cases. And you know, my job, as I see it, is to try to help make sure President Trump has the team he needs to be successful. You know, the people of Pennsylvania elected me to do my job, so I've got a job to interview those candidates, to advise and consent, and I'm taking that very seriously. But my goal is to try to make sure President Trump has what he needs to be successful, I've met with a number of candidates already. But next week, you know, I think it'll be mostly meeting with some of these nominees.
I love that so much. And a little birdie told me from your camp that you got your assignments. And, Dave, they are very impressive. You are going to be on the Energy Committee, Foreign Relations, and Banking. I mean, all of the hot topics right now.
Yeah,
everything we're talking about, whether it's crypto, whether it's the debanking that we see going around, especially energy and foreign relations. There's a lot going on. How are you?
There's a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ask, you know, you get to, you don't necessarily get what you want, but you get to share your preferences. And I wanted to be on committees where I could work on the agenda that we talked about on the campaign. And so energy was number one,
yeah.
You know, unlocking Pennsylvania's energy. And so I'm going to have an opportunity to do that. Senator Fetterman's on the Public Works and Environment Committee. So that those two committees deal with all the permitting for natural gas and so forth. So that's going to be a big focus. The Banking Committee has crypto, which, as you know, is a big mm-hmm. and growing area in Pennsylvania. But it also has all the sanctions and all the policies you can put against China. And you and I talked about that a lot during uh-huh. the campaign. We need to really toughen up on China, and the Banking Committee allows me to do that. And then, of course, foreign relations. One of the many things we'll talk about is support for Israel and okay. making sure that we stand with our ally in the region against Iran. And so, you know, these committees are going to be very, very connected to the things that I talked about on the campaign. And that that was my goal. I didn't want to be on a bunch of committees that were focused on things that weren't the priorities for Pennsylvanians.
I mean, well, these are very, like these three committees cover so many hot topic issues that we're contending with right now. I mean, we have a world that is increasingly less content with following America, whether we're talking about BRICS with Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa alliance trying to create a nemesis, a very strong kind of nemesis to America. Whether we're talking about right now, Donald Trump has, and I don't know if it's joking or if it's real, I'm gonna pitch this over to you, but if this expansionist kind of mindset, as he's talking about making, you know, I mean, whether it's a joke or not, you were there at the table when right. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, was there, and he made the joke calling Canada the 51st state. Now, at Christmas, called him Governor Trudeau. He is under a tremendous amount of pressure in his own country with a 69% disapproval rating right now. Right. But then you also have Panama Canal and Greenland wanting to purchase Greenland from Denmark. Do you think these are all jokes? Is he serious? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that the starting point is we had a huge vacuum of leadership under President Biden.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was the debacle of the withdrawal from Afghanistan or the weak way that he dealt with Ukraine, or whether it's been the weak leadership in the Middle East or with the Chinese surveillance balloon. So he got this huge vacuum, and all of a sudden Donald Trump showing up and he's filling that void. He's filling that vacuum. There's strong leadership. And, you know, the leaders around the world are recognizing that. And that's why I think there's this enormous outreach to President Trump. They know it's going to be a different kind of leadership, a strong hand. And I think, you know, when he talks about America first, you know, the way I believe he means that and the way he's talked about it is he wants to make sure that America is getting its fair shake around the world, that that America is not being taken advantage of, and that whether it's, you know, funding of NATO and making sure that the European countries pay their fair share, whether it's trade where we've been getting, you know, bad deals with Canada or Mexico. President Trump is saying, hey, listen, there's a new day, and America has got to be treated with the respect that it deserves and a fair deal for Americans and for Pennsylvanians. And that was what happened at the Trudeau dinner. It was so interesting. You know, we Dean and I were going to go down there and have dinner with the president, you know, following up on his win and my win in Pennsylvania. And then we got a call that said that the prime minister would be there. And, you know, what he talked about the whole time was the fact that the border was wide open and that you had fentanyl coming across the border from Canada now, and talked about these unfair deals. And, you know, I never want to predict whether President Trump's kidding or not about, you know, 51st state or Greenland or those things. I'm not sure what he's exactly trying to do there. But what I do think is clear, he's trying to assert American leadership to make sure that America gets a fair deal. And I think that's what happened at that dinner that night with Trudeau. And, you know, every leader in the world is coming to Mar-a-Lago or calling the president to make sure, you know, America's gets the respect it deserves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's a fair assessment, is that we need the world to know that there is new leadership going into Washington, D.C., from Congress to from the Senate to Congress all the way to the White House. Things are about to change. And so I would agree with that assessment. You know, not only are world leaders going to Mar-a-Lago, but we have a lot of tech bros going to Mar-a-Lago. Do you have any thoughts on this big brouhaha that some is calling a rift within MAGA? Do you see it as a rift or not?
You know, I here's what I would say on this. And you and I together, when we both campaigned, and then, you know, when we talked last year as I was campaigning, you know, one of the things that we have to do is make sure we're creating great jobs and great opportunity for American workers. And, you know, during the campaign, I talked about making sure that we had skilled training for welders and electricians.
We had
trade policies that made sure that we would have advanced manufacturing here in Pennsylvania, or energy and so forth. So our number one job needs to be making sure that American workers have great opportunity. And that's the long pole in the tent. And so I think that that's what President Trump talked about when he campaigned in Pennsylvania. I think I probably was with him 15 times, you know, on the stage talking about this. This was the center of his campaign, working families, creating great jobs. And that's got to be the centerpiece of his administration. And now in terms of legal immigration, you know, what I've always said on this, and as you know, Kathy, Dina, my wife, is a legal immigrant.
Yes.
You know, we are that beacon on the hill, which attracts talent from around the world, and we need to have a legal immigration system that allows for that. But the first priority has got to be closing that border. And so, you know, if you ask me what I'm thinking about the next 90 days or 180 days, consistent with what President Trump, it's closing the border, stopping the flow of illegal immigrants, creating great jobs for American workers, creating great opportunity for American workers. You know, we can talk about legal immigration reform down the road, but that, in my mind, would not be the priority right now.
Yeah, I know. And yet, for some, it seems to be the hill they're willing to die on. So I think that this is going to be something. I was telling someone yesterday, I never thought that leaving out of 2024, going into 2025, the number one topic on my mind would be H-1B visas.
No,
I didn't think that that would be, but it does. But it does put a spotlight on the quality of our own culture here in America, and what we are, and what we're doing to breed excellence in our country. Because as I tell my children, you're not just competing with fellow Americans, but you're literally competing with the world. And if ever there was a time that this was brought out, it was with this, you know, H-1B discussion.
Well, you're right about that, Kathy. And, you know, the thing that I know we both agree on is that part of the Trump agenda and part of, you know, the way to get America back where it needs to be is fixing our education system.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think we look at our education system and not say we're failing. You know, we're 27th in the world in terms of industrialized countries, in terms of the quality of our education. And so we've got incredible talent here with the American workforce, but we need to make sure we're educating people well. And that's why one of the things I talked about, and I think President Trump's going to act on this, is making sure we do everything we can to have school choice, because that creates opportunity for everybody across our country and make sure that our schools are truly competitive. So right now, to succeed in making great opportunity for American workers, we need to have great schools and great training. And there's a lot of work to do on both of those. And that's part of the next 100 days, the next 4 years, is making sure we do that.
Well, I love it. Thank you so much. Hit that outro music of Rocky. Take your lap around the ring, Dave. You deserve it. You deserve
it. Thank you,
Kathy. Congratulations.
Best for 2025. I'm so glad to be on with you today. Have a great new year.
Yes, you and your family. Tell your wife I said hello. Blessings.
I will. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, guys, see y'all on the other side of the break. I have Pastor John Amatuku coming up, and that call-in number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. We're rocking and rolling today. I see y'all on the other side.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.